पृथग्भावम् एकास्तम् अनुभाष्यते तथा एव च विष्ठारम् भ्राम संभज्यते तदा। When a sensible man ceases to see different identities due to different material bodies, and he sees how beings are expanded everywhere, he attains to the Brahman conception. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When one can see that the various bodies of living entities arise due to the different desires of the individual soul and do not actually belong to the soul itself, one actually sees. In the material conception of life, we find someone is a demigod, someone a human being, a dog, cat, etc. This is material vision, not actual vision. This material differentiation is due to a material conception of life. After the destruction of the material body, the spirit soul is one. The spirit soul, due to contact with material nature, gets different types of bodies. When one can see this, he attains spiritual vision. Thus, being freed from differentiations like man, animal, big, low, etc., one becomes purified in his consciousness and able to develop Krishna consciousness in his spiritual identity. How he then sees things will be explained in the next verse. Anatitvam niganatvat paramatmayam avyaya sarirasto pikonteya nakaroti nalipyate. Those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. With the kind permission and blessings of the assembled devotees, we will speak from these beautiful verses of the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It is herein explained that the dualities of material nature are born of our own mental conceptions. It is described that there are various bodies, in fact 8,400,000, in which the pure soul can enter due to its conditioning of wanting to lord it over and enjoy material nature. And there are also three modes of material nature, and these three modes have tremendous, tremendous potential to interact with each other. And factually, the 8,400,000 species of life, as well as everything within the creation, is nothing but various mixtures of these three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. But it is being explained here that the soul, which is eternal, which is part of God, identifies itself with this phenomenon due to the desires in which it maintains and preserves, as well as cultivates. The Lord has one energy. It is His pleasure potency. That energy subdivides into essentially two manifestations. Maya means energy. There is Yoga Maya and there is Mahamaya. Yoga means to unite. The Yoga Maya energy is that which maintains and ever expands wonderful, wonderful facilities for the loving relationships between the pure souls and God. And Mahamaya potency is that which covers. First it throws one down from one's original consciousness, and then it keeps one covered from allowing to see one's true nature and see the all-attractive Krishna everywhere. So when we come under this Maya potency, Mahamaya, material energy, we are endlessly entangled. Parashya shaktir vividai vashuyate. And the dualities of material life become the only reality of our existence. We struggle within this material creation to try to battle off the negative side of the dualities and to try to somehow or other acquire the positive sides of the dualities, happiness, distress, pleasure, pain, health, disease, birth, death. And the whole material civilization is simply based on this principle. Trying to avoid pain, trying to find pleasure. Trying to prolong life, trying to avoid death. Trying to seek happiness, trying to avoid distress. Trying so hard to be honored and do whatever we can to avoid being dishonored. Trying to fill our stomach and avoid hunger. These are also dualities. Trying to quench our thirst and avoid thirst. Trying to see beautiful things and avoid ugly things. Trying to be loved and trying to avoid being hated. So in this way, this human life is wasted, simply battling with the dualities born of the three modes of material nature. But Bhagavad Gita explains that these dualities are inherent in one another, in the sense that they are inseparable. You cannot have the positive without the negative, because they are both of the same nature. Just like the example is given, there are two sides to a coin. We may like the head side, but not like the tail side. But if we pick up the head side, in our hand is the tail side. If you don't want the tail side, you have to renounce the head side. Huh? Similarly, if we want to avoid hatred, disease, death, pain, dishonor, then we have to renounce happiness, health. We have to renounce all the pleasures of life itself. But how to do this? There are different philosophies explaining. The impersonalist school of philosophy explain that everything is an illusion. Therefore, we should simply go beyond all duality, understanding everything to be illusion except Brahman. Brahma Jagan Mitya Brahma Satyam. That Brahman is the supreme truth, the only reality, and everything else is an illusion. It is a dream. It really does not even exist. And therefore, we try to make our heart and our mind like a piece of stone, without feeling, without desire, seeking nothing, just being, they say satisfied in and of itself, but not even satisfied, simply being aloof. That aloofness is to be considered the greatest bliss or satisfaction. But how is it that the spirit soul, immediately upon entering the body of any species, is seeking pleasure, is seeking reciprocations of love? Is it actually the highest perfection of life to become so stone-hearted, hard-hearted, to be aloof from the conception of love? Because in order for there to be love, there must be a conception of duality. There must be a lover, and there must be the beloved. And there must be love itself. And to the degree the exchange between the lover and the beloved is attractive to the soul, to that degree we derive ecstasy. The soul is searching for ecstasy. But now we are searching ecstasies in the mortal dualities of this world, where they are all mixed with pain, suffering, and death. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita teaches us that we should seek our ecstasy in where ecstasy is to be found. Apare amitashvanyam prakritim virime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam dharayate jaga bhumirapo nalo vayur kam mano buddhar eva cha ahankara ityame bina prakritir ashtata. Krishna says in Gita that this material existence, where all dualities are born, is composed of these eight elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. But there is another nature, which is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. And Krishna explains that in this other nature, we have perception of the source of all pleasure, or Krishna. Krishna, because his nature is that he is unlimited. He is Rasaraj. His attraction, his beauty, his wealth, his strength, his fame, his knowledge, his renunciation, all of his opulences are unlimited. Therefore, only Krishna can give unlimited pleasure to our hearts and to our souls. Mamaivam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. And Krishna explains that the spirit soul is eternally his part. That means in the spiritual world, beyond this material creation, there is always eternally duality. There is Krishna, there is the living entity, and there is the ecstatic love exchanged between Krishna and the living entity. And this material world is not an illusion, but it is illusory, because all of the dualities within this world are temporary and they are not of the substantial quality of the soul. The soul is spiritual. This world is temporary. So to understand these principles is to understand the science of bhakti. achintya bheda bheda tattva, that we are simultaneously, inconceivably one with God and different from God. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world to make everything very simple. Although when he spoke with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati, on the basis of scripture, on the basis of logic and argument, philosophy, he very, very authoritatively established that the soul is the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That this conception of merging into the oneness of Brahman, this conception of seeing no duality between the soul and God, is a lesser realization and it is an illusory realization. But for the common man, he made it all very simple. When he was just a little baby, when he was just a child, Krishna appeared in the form of Lord Chaitanya to reveal the highest truths to the simplest, most common people in this age of Kali Yuga, as well as to the greatest scholars. So one day, Lord Chaitanya, who was then known as Nimai Pandit, was sitting, and his mother, she brought her baby child, very nicely prepared fried rice and sandesh, sweets. She prepared it with her own loving hands with great devotion. In the ecstasy of loving relationships, yoga maya, sometimes to increase the facility of ecstatic love, she covers Krishna's opulence in the sense that Sachi Devi loved Krishna in the form of Nimai as her own child. The love of a mother for a child is much more intimate than a servant to a master. So similarly, to love God as your own child is a more intimate and sweeter form of love than loving him as the supreme creator and destroyer of all existence. But this is not something that can be artificially imposed on your mind. When we become completely pure in our heart and we become perfectly realized in the path of bhakti, then Krishna naturally reveals these higher, more intimate forms of loving relationship to us. So Sachi Devi cooked and gave nice prasad to Nimai, and then she went to perform her household duties. And Nimai put down the rice, and he put down the sweets, and he started picking up handfuls of dirt and eating the dirt. Handful after handful of dirt he was eating. And Sachi Mata, when she came out and she saw this is what is happening, she became very alarmed. She started crying out, "What are you doing? Stop this, stop this." And she took the dirt out of his hands and cleaned his hands, and she began to scold him, as any mother would do for the protection of her child. And Nimai began to cry. In his very simple baby voice, he said, "Mother, why are you scolding me? You have given me dirt, so I am eating it." Sachi Mata said, "I didn't give you dirt. I gave you very, very delicious, nutritious rice and sandesh." He said, "But what is this rice and sandesh?" Nimai replied, "It is all transformation of earth. Everything within this world is a transformation of earth. My body is a transformation of earth. Don't you see that ultimately everything is one? Why are you making these discriminations, mother?" And Sachi Mata replied, "Yes, it is true. that everything is a transformation of earth, but still there is a difference. The difference is, if you eat nice sandesh and rice, you will become healthy and live a long life. But if you eat dirt, you will get diseased and sick. She explained that if you take earth and transform it into a nice pot, you can carry water with that pot. But if you put water on the earth, you cannot carry water. You just get mud. So when Nimai heard this, he said, "Mataji, why you didn't tell me this philosophy before? I have been eating all this dirt. Why you did not ask to tell me this philosophy before?" He said, "From this day on, I will only drink the milk from you." And then he climbed on his mother's lap and he began to drink the milk from her body. So this wonderful story, although very simple, shows how Mother Sachi Devi, a simple, sensible housewife, not a great scholar, she completely defeated, she annihilated the basic premise and foundation that the whole Mayavad philosophy stands upon. That everything is one, and all duality is an illusion. And she established a chintya beda beda tattva. That yes, everything is one, but at the same time, everything is simultaneously different. And those differences in the material world are functional and necessary to appreciate and respect. And in the spiritual world, those differences are eternal, and it is those differences which support and facilitate ecstasy, ananda, loving exchange. There are three aspects of the Absolute Truth, sat, chit, ananda. The oneness of everything being spiritual is called sat. The all-knowing potency of the Lord within the heart of every living being is called chit. But the duality, the variegatedness of the spiritual world which eternally exists to provide and facilitate wonderful, wonderful facilities for loving exchanges is the ananda potency of the Lord, the Hladini Shakti. And Mother Sachi Devi so wonderfully established, and from that point on, nowhere else in the whole Leela of Lord Chaitanya did he ever speak this non-dualistic Mayavad philosophy. But from that point on, he was always very strong to establish the eternal servitorship of the eternal soul with Krishna. On another occasion, just after this, Mother Sachi, she decorated her son with very fine, beautiful jewelry. And because Nimai's complexion was so beautiful, it was effulgent gold in hue, that it is not that the jewels made Lord Chaitanya beautiful, but Lord Chaitanya made the jewels beautiful. Srila Prabhupada told us when we decorate the deities, we should not think that our decorations will make Krishna beautiful. Krishna is the source of all beauty. It's Krishna that makes all the decorations beautiful. So, in his restless manner, he went out to play. He was roaming near the banks of the Ganges. At that time, two thieves who were looking for someone to rob and steal, they saw little Nimai. and thieves are very attracted to gold. So when they saw this beautiful, beautiful, effulgent golden color radiating from this child, they immediately became full of greed and lust for gold. And then when they saw the wonderful jewelry, pearls and jewels that he was wearing on his wrists and on his arms and on his neck, they were thinking, this is a baby with such valuable jewels. Very easy to rob him. So they picked him up. They picked him up in such a way that everybody around would think that they were his own parents or well-wishers. They called out, son, son, we've been looking all over for you. Please come home. And then they ran and lifted him up and started walking very quickly. And Nimai just got up on their shoulders. And they were afraid, maybe he will cry, maybe he will scream for help. So they had nice sandesh. And they, as they were walking very, very quickly, they were handing him this sandesh. And he was taking it and eating it, and he was enjoying it very much. He was taking a nice ride with all nice refreshments. And he was a baby. He had not seen so many places in Navadvip, but they were taking him to places he had never seen before. It was a wonderful adventure. Taking a ride, nice refreshments, sightseeing. And they kept speaking such nice, affectionate words to him. We are taking you home, my child. We are taking you home. But actually, they were going very, very secret places to go to their own secret hideout, where they were going to put him down and steal everything from him, and then we don't know what they would have done. So they went through the winding roads of Navadvip, various places, and then they were just coming to their secret hideout. And when they arrived, they let Nimai down. But it just so happened that it wasn't their secret hideout. It was Nimai's house. Meanwhile, while they were taking this long journey, Nimai's mother and father, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, they were looking everywhere for him. Where is he? And all their friends and relatives, they all started searching, and they were in terrible anxiety. He's gone. All of his favorite playing places, they were searching, but he was nowhere to be seen. They didn't know where else to look. So they were all just sitting. Some were searching helplessly, but everyone was crying, weeping, in total anxiety that maybe he has been kidnapped, maybe he has been killed, maybe he has gotten in trouble. You know how a mother and father worry about a baby child when it's gone. What to speak when that baby child is the all-attractive reservoir of all beauty and the recipient of all love. So just at that moment when the thieves put him down, Nimai jumped off their shoulders and ran right to his mother and father's arms. And they were very happy. There was a whole cry, Hari, Hari!
Hari!
They began to think, our son has returned. There is a saying, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Sambhog and Vipralamba. When there is separation, the meeting becomes ever more joyful. So the Lord increased the ecstasy of the love of his parents by returning. And they all began to think, this is the proof of what the scripture says, that for helpless children and old people, the Lord Vishnu personally protects them and gives them good luck. And then they asked Nimai, where have you been? Where have you gone? Meanwhile, the thieves, as soon as they saw that they somehow or other came to the child's house, they were completely bewildered and disturbed. They didn't know what to think. But the first thing they thought is, we have to get out of here. We are thieves and robbers. we can get in great trouble. We could be caught. So they ran as fast as they could away. And as they were running and running and running and running and running to get to the farthest place they possibly could, they began to speak to each other that we must have been cursed by some magician. How is it possible that we thought this was our house and it was his house? And then they were thinking, it must be because we are worshiping Goddess Chandi, Durga, very nicely, that she has protected us from being caught. Meanwhile, Nimai told his relatives that I was playing on the Ganges and I got lost. And these two very nice men, they took me home. So they, oh, very nice, we should reward them. So they brought beautiful, beautiful silk turbans, and they brought them out to give to the men as gifts of appreciation. But of course, the thieves have run away. They were gone. So this also, this wonderful story, gives us a glimpse into the difference between the internal and external energies of the Lord. Because these thieves, they wanted to exploit the resources of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They had no devotion. They had an enjoying mentality. Therefore, even though the Supreme Absolute Truth was riding on their shoulders, they couldn't recognize him. What people perform, religious sacrifices, tapasya, studying of shastra, for millions and millions of births to achieve, they had right in their arms. Krishna says in Gita, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavamam papadyate vasudeva saravamiti samahatma sudurlabaha. After many births and deaths, one who comes to the point of the highest knowledge understands Vasudev, Krishna, to be the cause of all causes and surrenders. They had Vasudev, Krishna in their arms, riding on their shoulder, accepting their sandesh. But yet, did they feel ecstasy? Did they feel love? They only felt fear. After all that wonderful mercy they received, they only felt fear. Because Krishna says in Gita, Ye yatamam prapadyante tam sthithaiva bhajamyaham mamuvart manuvaratante manushaparata saharavasha, that as you approach me, I reveal myself accordingly. They approached the Lord to exploit him, so he covered his divine loving potencies through Mahamaya, so they could not recognize or appreciate who he was. But his parents, when he returned, they held him in the same arms. Both the thieves and his mother and father held him in the arms the same way and were feeding him the same way. But they were experiencing an ecstasy that the material mind and intelligence can never ever fathom or comprehend. They were experiencing an ecstasy which the Shastras explain are billions and trillions and quadrillions, unlimitedly, infinitely more satisfying than the impersonalists experience when they merge into the Brahma Jyoti. They experienced a happiness, a joy, and a love that even in the highest heavenly planets, no one can possibly comprehend. Because the joy of accumulating wealth, the joy of developing various mental or physical skills, the joy of popularity in this world, gives no pleasure to the soul. In fact, it doesn't even give real joy to the mind. It gives a sense of joy, but simultaneously it creates agitation.
Matrasparashastu konteya sitoshna sukadukama agamapayano nityastham statikshasvabharata.
Krishna explains the non-permanent appearance and disappearance of all these dualistic things of this world. They cause great pain. We should give up our attachment for them. This is intelligence. So what Mother Sakshi and Jagannath Mishra experienced was ecstatic spiritual bliss based on the highest realization of the absolute truth, spiritual duality, achintya veda veda tattva, that I am the mother and this is my child, and the child happens to be God. And that loving relationship was ecstatic. But the thieves, they were seeing in terms of material duality. They were not thinking in terms of service. They were thinking in terms of their own selfish purpose and enjoyment. Therefore, they were thinking that their good luck was they escaped punishment. But at the same time, the acharyas explain that Lord Chaitanya is so kind that even though they apparently had no benefits in that life because of their enviousness and greed, actually, because they gave Krishna pleasure and his devotees pleasure, in their next birth, they were certain to get pure devotional service. It is called agyata sukriti. When we somehow or other please the Lord or please his devotees, even unknowingly, we get tremendous spiritual benefits, and that benefit opens the doors to bhakti in a future. When we become somehow or other frustrated with our selfish material pursuits, the road to bhakti is right before us. Because these thieves gave him a ride, they made him laugh, they gave him nice offerings of fresh sweetmeats, so they pleased the Lord. And when they brought him home, they gave great pleasure to the devotees. And we know that when we please the Lord's devotees, the Lord bestows great mercy upon us. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to give benediction to everyone. And this is the good fortune. This is the good fortune that is available within this age of Kali Yuga, that the Lord has come to give good fortune to everyone. And Srila Prabhupada explained, our Guru Maharaj, that this Krishna consciousness movement is Lord Chaitanya's movement. It is a movement which is simply dedicated to the purpose of giving good fortune to everyone, knowingly or unknowingly. People who are sincere, there are four types of people, it is explained, who approach Krishna. People who are in material distress, people who are in poverty, people who are genuinely inquisitive, and people who are sincerely seeking the absolute truth. Those people, they will accept the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. They want to hear the philosophy of Gita. They want to learn how to become free from suffering and develop their spiritual consciousness through chanting God's name. But those people who are not so fortunate, who are not aspiring for anything spiritual in their lives, if somehow or other they come in contact with any of the activities in the service of the Lord, and they appreciate those activities,
It is called Agyata Sukriti. They are guaranteed to have their heart transformed either now or in the future. If someone simply appreciates the taste of prasad, if someone appreciates the activities of a devotee, if someone appreciates the philosophy that the devotees are speaking or the books written by the great souls, if someone somehow or other hears the holy name in kirtan and says, oh, that is very nice, then their spiritual life begins. Even if they have no qualifications, even if they have no previous merit to bring them to the highest path of bhakti, just by that simple appreciation, they are given the facility to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna will give them all opportunity. And in this age of Kali Yuga, this is factually the only hope for most of the human society. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya sent his devotees to spread the glories of the holy name, to spread the glories of pure bhakti devotional service to everyone, everywhere, without discrimination, to give everyone the chance, the facility. And that is the greatest charity. That is the greatest compassion. To transform our consciousness from the influence of Mahamaya to that of Yogamaya. It is explained that that one energy appears in two ways, according to the receptacle of our mind. Just like electricity, when it is in a stove, it creates heat. When it is in a refrigerator, it creates cold. So similarly, the divine energy of the Lord, which is all pervading within all the material and spiritual worlds, when that energy enters into the heart of a humble devotee, it creates a deep, loving desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it reveals the Lord to us in everything we see, in everything we experience. But that same energy, when it enters into the heart of someone who is greedy, someone who is envious, someone who wants to enjoy the property of God, who has no desire to serve the Lord, it completely obscures and covers the reality of God from our vision. And it only increases our desire to try to find happiness in this illusion. So, by hearing these wonderful pastimes of the Lord, by reading the scriptures which describe the transcendental nature of Krishna and Krishna's energies, by associating with the Lord's devotees, and by chanting Krishna's holy names, gradually we can come under the influence of Krishna's Yogamaya potency. That potency which draws us nearer and nearer and nearer to the Lord and his eternal family in this spiritual world. And it is for this reason that we assemble in our temple to revive, inspire, and enlighten our hearts with Krishna consciousness, the goal and the purpose of life. Every devotee is unique, individual, and special. We should not compare ourselves with other devotees in a materialistic way, because each devotee is empowered by God according to God's will, Some are empowered to cook. Some are empowered to sing. Some are empowered to dance. Some are empowered to speak. Some are empowered to manage. And we should be inspired by that. We should respect that. We should honor and adore that. We should not think, why not me? Because if you compare yourself in a materialistic way, what you are doing is you are making judgment on Krishna. Why, Krishna, you are giving this opulence to this person? Why not me? And actually, the opulence is Krishna's opulence. If we want, we don't want to see Krishna's opulence if we don't want to see it exhibited by the devotees. Sometimes devotees are very empowered to attract many people, and we think, why him, why not me? If I can't help them become Krishna conscious, better they don't become Krishna conscious. But it's not that person. It's Krishna. Krishna's inspiring, enlightening people through that person. Whether he inspires or enlightens through him, her, me, or someone else is not what's important. What's important is Krishna is giving his mercy. And we are just praying that according to whatever capacity Krishna wants to give us, that he empowers us to do his will within this world, whatever it may be. Whether we be Hanuman or the little squirrel. Hanuman was building the bridge across the Indian Ocean by carrying massive mounts, stones from the peaks of mountains. And the squirrel was just kicking little grains of sand. And when Hanuman said, get out of my way, useless squirrel, Ram said, no, Hanuman, he's as good as you. I am personally empowering him to kick sand, and I'm personally empowered you to lift mountains. Now what is the difference? You are both surrendered to do my will, so he is as good as you. So we should never see materially. We should never see even our devotional service in terms of these material dualities that we are discussing. We should see it in terms of love, the spiritual duality. What is our enthusiasm? What is our desire to serve the Lord? And in whatever way we do, this is the perfection of our life. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, when he was in his last days, one devotee was singing very beautifully. And he asked another devotee, he said, you stop singing. I want to hear from someone else. And that person, he had a nice voice, but no comparison as far as material beauty. But he sang with great devotion. And he knew exactly what his guru wanted to hear. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was not concerned with these things. In fact, sometimes people would prepare wonderful, delicious foods for him. And then he would put salt all over it. Because he wanted to show that I'm concerned with the love, I'm not concerned with the material appearance of things. Gorkhashore Das Babaji, he was very strict in this way. He had absolutely no attraction for any appearance that a devotee may artificially display. He was only concerned with simple devotion. So we should do the best we possibly can to show compassion to others the best we possibly can, to offer our hearts and our love to Krishna. And we should not be frustrated, we should not be discouraged by any physical or mental deficiencies. We should simply be grateful that I'm given an opportunity. I'm given an opportunity to serve. Therefore, I am the most fortunate. And if we serve sincerely, then we are the most fortunate. At the same time, if Krishna does empower us to do things very wonderfully, we should not become proud. We should not think I am better than others. Because it is not you, it is Krishna. Krishna is doing what he wants through one person and through some and is doing something else through you. You should not be envious. And you should not be proud. We should not think any devotee is useless if they are sincerely trying. Because Krishna sees the sincere effort. He doesn't see how much money you give. He sees the sincerity in which you're trying to help. When Srila Prabhupada was living at Radha Damodar Temple, there was he used to tell us this story. He lived there for many years. And every single day, this old widow, she had no home. She had no money. She had nothing. She only had one little set of clothes, white, tattered, sari. And she begged to eat. But every day, she would come with a pot of water. She would go all the way to the Jamuna, and she would fill this pot. It wasn't even her pot. The pot belonged to the temple. She would go to the temple, she would get the pot from the temple, she would go to the Jamuna, she would fill it with water, and then she would bring that clay pot back for the purpose of bathing Radha Damodar. And every day at the same time, she was there offering that water from the Jamuna. Srila Prabhupada explained, this is bhakti. This is real devotion. People are giving crores of rupees to build temples, but they have some desire for prestige. People are also giving crores of rupees for temples, and they have a pure desire to serve the Lord. It is not that there's any defect with giving big things. Whether you have big, if you have big, you must give big in a spirit of sincere devotion. If you have small, then you must give the small thing with the bigness of your heart in a spirit of devotion. And they are equal. Here was Srila Prabhupada, who became a great world acharya, 108 temples all over the world. He started very small and simple, but after some time, he was flying in jet airplanes by the will of his disciples from one continent to another, received with beautiful cars and garlands, and given so much facilities to serve. And yet, he would think back about this old lady at Radha Damodar. Her life was perfect. He said, she will definitely go back to Godhead, go back to Krishna, because she brings that water every day. She did what she could. But his Western disciples, he expected more than a bucket of water from them, because they had such capacity. So we must see the oneness within the differentiation. Within all of our activities, the one thing that unites us is Krishna and bhakti. But yet, in this world and in the spiritual world, there will always be unlimited differentiation within that oneness. And that facilitates unlimited excitement in spiritual loving exchanges between ourselves, between with Krishna, and between ourselves and the whole family and world of Krishna's devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna is the sublime method which creates the real thread of oneness and unity in our hearts. When we come together to congregationally chant and dance together for the pleasure of the Lord and for the pleasure of the deities and the devotees, we can realize practically the supreme sweetness of this philosophy of Achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva. How we are simultaneously one and different than Krishna. And how we can experience Krishna in a wonderful way in each devotee and in all of the phenomena of the material and spiritual worlds. The congregational chanting of the holy names prepares our consciousness, enlightens our minds, so that we can truly experience the wonder of Krishna in everything and in everywhere. And in this way, whatever we see, whatever any of our senses experience, it only increases the quality of that love. So at this time, let us receive the mercy of the Lord and perform the wonderful Sankirtan of the holy name.